Your Health is supported by the North Carolina Cancer Hospital, serving you with innovative research with unequaled care. UNC Healthcare is leading, teaching, caring.
News Talk 1360, WCHL, and UNC Family Medicine present Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page. Your Health, providing practical health-related news and information for our listeners. Dr. Goldstein and Dr. Page are both actively involved in patient care at UNC Family Medicine. Now, Your Health.
Welcome to UNC Family Medicine's Your Health, supported by UNC Healthcare. I'm Dr. Christy Page, and I'm joined today by Dr. Bob Gwyther, who will be filling in for Adam. On our show today, we're going to be talking with Dr. Yasha Steinmetz, author and associate professor at the University of Wisconsin, about her book, Eat Local, Simple Steps to Enjoy Real, Healthy, and Affordable Food. I'm really excited to have you with me today, Bob, and to be talking about local food.
Well, it's great to be here again, and I like that topic, too.
Well, we're going to jump into research that matters. We've got some good ones today, Bob. We've got something about stroke and fish and about well child visits. And also about heavier kids and social problems and about germs in hospitals. Let's jump in on our first one about fish and a relationship with stroke.
So this is a group of studies that were looked at, some of which were 4 months long and, or sorry, 4 years long, and some of which were 30 years long. And they tried to look at what happens with people who eat a lot of fish when it comes to whether or not they have stroke. And they do notice that there's a decrease in the percentage of people who have stroke, a major health problem in this country, if they eat quite a bit of fish.
And we know that stroke is super common. Over 800,000 people in our country have a stroke each year. A large portion of those die from it. People are devastated by stroke. Most of it's related to smoking and drinking and weight and blood pressure and other things. But they tried to sort of isolate out the diet piece of this independent of those things.
And the first thing they jumped to is this thing about omega-3 fatty acids, which are components of fish oil. And we've been talking a lot about that in this country from the standpoint of reducing various kinds of artery disease, including coronary artery disease, and the kind that causes stroke, which is cerebral artery disease.
And in this case, I mean, at least it looks like eating about 2 or 3 servings a week of fish that have these omega-3s in them was linked with people having a lower risk of stroke over time. So that's encouraging. I'm going to eat my fish tonight. How about you, Bob?
I eat a lot of it, actually. Of course, they go on to point out that vitamin D, selenium, and some other kinds of proteins may be involved, too, because nobody clearly understands this. But it seems to be fish that are fattier than others, like salmon and other fish, especially high in omega-3 fatty acids. And it doesn't seem to correlate if you're just eating fried fish sticks in a fish sandwich.
Well, let's talk about the next study about well child visits. This is really important to me. So let's talk about the research first, and then I'll tell you what I'm trying to do about it, at least locally.
Okay. So this basically says that docs have problems getting things done in short periods of time, which they increasingly find themselves spending with patients. And interestingly, they said that most appointments for physicians with physicians for well children last less than 10 minutes. Very few physicians have more than 20 minutes to spend. And the question is, can one examine a child, be sure there's no diseases going on, and also cover all of the subjects that parents want to know about child raising in a 10-minute office visit?
Yeah, and the answer, of course, is no. There's lots of studies about parents not being satisfied with this care, about providers being frustrated that they don't have enough time to cover all the important information in a well-child check. And so we've developed a model at in our practice at the Family Medicine Center at UNC about group visits for well child care. And the model, at least in our early studies, is promising that the patients like having more time, an hour and a half to 2 hours, with other parents of children of about the same age with their provider, to have more time to ask questions, to not feel like you have to rush through your list of questions, but to be able to explore it with other parents going through the same thing. And so far, our patient satisfaction has been high, and our our rates of getting immunizations and having all the topics covered have been at least as good as an individual visits, and shows a lot of promise. So I'm excited about that as one model to respond to what this study is showing, just another piece of that puzzle saying we don't have enough time to do what we need to do in those well-child visits.
And, you know, I could, as somebody that never did one of those, I can see why it would be really neat to be able to have, say, three visits all together for 30 minutes and talk about eating once, exercise once, how do you get a kid to read books once and have it be heard by three families.
Well, and to have the parents come in with their own questions as well. And so it's really a beautiful thing. I'd love to have more time to talk about it. But now we're going to talk about heavier kids and social problems. We know this is a problem in our country, adolescent and childhood obesity. This is a piece of research saying that it's hard for kids who are overweight.
Yeah, and that's not exactly news. I mean, I've been around a long time, but I can remember the grade school days where kids that were overweight did tend to get picked on more by other people. And now in this country, we have such an epidemic of obesity in adults and in kids that it's a bigger problem.
This was a study looking at about 3,300 children for about 4 years. And this was done in Australia, but they found that the heavy kids were up to 20% more likely at age 8 or 9 to have problems or be described by their parents as having social difficulties and described by their teachers as having emotional problems, much higher risk for being bullied. And, you know, a lot of these things that we might assume, but it's really bearing out to be the truth.
Yeah, and doing something about it probably will help. That they didn't really get to tell us. But it would seem to be sense that if we can get kids to get exercise more and eat better diets and spend more time running around the neighborhood than in front of the TV set, that maybe this will be better.
And for parents, I'd say, you know, this is hard. If you have a child who's overweight, it's complex. It's a very difficult thing to work on. But be aware that these challenges, they may be having more challenges at school that you should ask about and find out if they're getting picked on and be able, we need to be also providing that emotional support as we're trying to solve the problem of the weight itself.
And the last one we've got today is hospital privacy curtains are laden with germs. And, I guess it's sort of a truism to say that the worst bacteria in town are always in the hospitals because that's where people go to get cured and that's where they wind up leaving them one way or another. And things that aren't constantly changed and updated, like, say, the privacy curtains we've got in offices or the emergency setting or whatever, or the ties the doctors wear around their neck, just are likely to pick up and harbor dangerous bacteria.
Yeah, this was a study about, you know, those curtains that are in the rooms that separate you from the other person sharing your room, being tested and swabbed to see what kind of germs grow out. And I guess it's no surprise to us, as you're saying, Bob, that they're covered with germs. But thinking about, gosh, you're in the hospital with this cloth that's rubbing up against you that may be harboring Staph aureus or that kind MRSA that's resistant to other antibiotics or other bacteria that are resistant to antibiotics. And I don't know, that's just kind of gross.
It is. And it doesn't make you want to be there very much, does it?
No, another reason why trying to stay out of the hospital and get out of there as quickly as possible, working with your doctor to do that is important.
Well, that concludes the Research That Matters portion of our show. We'll be going to take a short break, and when we return, we'll be talking with Dr. Yasha Steinmetz about her book, Eat Local, Simple Steps to Enjoy Real, Healthy, and Affordable Food.
And thanks to Dr. Bob Gwaither for being with us today. You're listening to Your Health. Please stay with us.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page on News Talk 1360 WCHL, sponsored by UNC Family Medicine. And now, more of Your Health.
Welcome back to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page. I'm joined today by my guest host, Dr. Bob Gwaither, who is filling in for Adam today. Today on Conversations, we're going to be talking with Dr. Yasha Steinmetz, author and associate professor at the University of Wisconsin, about her book. I'm sure lots of people in our community are going to love this, Eat Local, Simple Steps to Enjoy Real, Healthy, and Affordable Food. Thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Steinmetz.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, we would love to hear, I mean, your book is beautiful and simple and very understandable, but I'd love to hear briefly how this became your passion.
Well, I think starting out in clinical practice as a dietitian probably helped me realize some of the concerns that people have about food and their diet relationship with health, how difficult some of the changes may be for people once they're diagnosed with a disease and it becomes a medical issue. So that's been a concern. Before I was a dietitian, I had the opportunity to travel quite a bit around the world, and I could see the close relationship between economics and agriculture, food choices, and then people's health. And primarily, I was in areas where it was low income. There was a lot of influence from the international market that I think we can be unaware of here, but is definitely very much an everyday reality for people in the countries that I've been in. And then also just a slight change in working patterns can really affect children, and I think we forget that, although we realize that now with both parents working and the kind of shift that we make in children's diet and family diet. So I think all of that contributed to me coming into the university setting with a different outlook about what was happening with food than maybe some other people. I'm very much interested in application of knowledge, so I really want change to happen that help people get better, and so that was a big impetus for my book.
Well, that shows. I mean, it's clear in reading the book that it's easy to understand. I mean, your message is very clear with all the simple steps, and I'm excited to talk more about it.
So we've got quite a few local farmers around here, and increasingly there's farmers markets in several of the towns close to Chapel Hill. And, you know, a lot of people show up there on Saturday mornings often, but other times of the week, and buy things and are surprised to find out that there's quite a bit of stuff, but they can't always find strawberries or they can't always find apples. And it's interesting that if one is going to actually eat local, one has to have a repertoire of cooking because there's so many different foods available and things that aren't available.
Yes, and I think, let's put cooking a little bit on the side, because before that, I think a lot of us forget that you could go to a farmer's market and not have any cooking skills or do any cooking. All you need is to wash the fruit or the vegetable and eat it. And I think sometimes when we go to the store, when we think about going to the store, we think about meal planning, but I think when people move to local food, they think that it's going to be more complex in that I have to really have much more sophisticated cooking skills. But in fact, the beauty of going to the farmer's market is that you can eat the majority of things without any preparation. So the first simple step that I think for consumers is go and get something fresh and raw and eat that, because the taste is so incredibly enjoyable and different. And so right away, you're sparking all of your sensory characteristics.
Along with that, I think, you know, another perhaps misconception is about the cost of food. So you talk to people about buying fresh vegetables or buying organic vegetables, and in this case, buying local foods. And, you know, what my patients tell me is that, well, it costs more. I don't have that money.
Right. And working with university students and with the public, I hear that a lot, and I understand that. And I think that's something in central Wisconsin that we deal with all the time, because we're an agricultural community in a small city, and so that's absolutely a legitimate concern. There are two things about that. One is I would encourage people to think about what they get for their food dollar and the nutrients and the benefit that you get from food versus calories. And I think in some ways, as a dietitian talking about nutrients, we've kind of moved away from talking about food and whole foods, as if when dietitians say nutrients, we mean food and nutrients. But oftentimes when consumers hear that, they just hear nutrients and therefore supplements or anything.
Vitamins.
Right. Everything becomes, you know, just a subset of that. So that's why when I say that I'm a professor, I say I'm a professor of food and nutrition, because then it helps emphasize that food part. But so there's the value that you get for your dollar. So the fresher it is, the more varieties you have, so that it's tastier, so that you'll consume more, so that you have a diversity of foods within your diet. I think all of that speaks to local food as being a really good investment. And then the other part about economy, which is why I devoted a small section in the book to really looking at your food dollars within your budget and how to make the best out of those dollars, how to stretch those dollars. But really the first consideration, I think, for people is, do you really know what you're spending your dollar on? How much of your income, or what is the percentage that you're spending on food? And then also, have you really looked at the prices of food in your store and done that comparison shopping? Because every fall, our students go out. There's an assignment that I do. The students go out into the farmer's market. They catalog everything in the farmer's market, and then they go to every grocery store that we have, discount stores, superstores, family-owned stores, and then they comparison shop with that. Now, I would say less than a half of the foods in the farmer's market are actually available in the grocery store, because there's a lot more variety in a farmer's market than what people realize. But in that comparison shopping, you know, apple to apple, tomato to tomato, the farmer's market as a whole on that list is always, always cheaper.
That's fascinating. It's just opposite from the perception.
Absolutely. And it's even hard for the students to accept that, because when they describe it, they say, well, some of the things are cheaper. And I say, but your evidence shows that, you know, and it could be cheaper by $12 up to $25.
Wow.
Last year it was considerable. And that's not even considering all the variety. So, getting back to Bob's first point about cooking and the variety, if you're eating locally, there's a lot more variety that's available, because farmers can grow things that are specific to your area that might be heritage crops or crops that don't transport well but are really good to have in your local markets, whether it's bringing it into the grocery store or the farmer's market or a school or a hospital setting.
Oh. Dr. Steinmetz, I know we're about to need to take a break, but I wonder if before we do, we've been talking about, you know, these the cost perception, economy, different perceptions people have about eating local. But give us this just a breakdown of the top reasons that we should be buying local, with a priority perhaps to health reasons. Why does this matter?
Well, I think
it's hard to tell you to do that quickly.
Right.
You do some simple steps in the book.
Okay. The first is, it's healthier. It's very difficult for you to mono-eat if you're eating locally, which means already you have variety in your food. And it goes out of season, so you have to choose something else, which, again, forces you to have variety. The next is that you have foods that are harvested as close to fresh and maximum nutrition as possible. The flavor, you're creating flavor memories and food memories for your family and your children, so your children will choose differently in the future. You're shaping.
I want to talk about children in the next segment for sure.
Right. So you're shaping, helping to shape their food memories of what real food tastes like, so that that will be their norm, and so they'll make better choices in the future. Then there's the economics of it, that I think you can leverage your food dollar. You can get a better price for your dollar, better nutrient value for your dollar, better tasting food for your dollar with local food. And then lastly, I think it's a food security issue. I don't think people realize that farmers are declining as a part of our population. And in that decline goes the food knowledge, the agricultural knowledge, in your local area. So if anything happens to our borders or our state, so any energy problems, water problems, seed variety, anything that happens, we want those farmers in our area, and we want to support those farmers because that's our food insurance. We can't all grow food, but our farmers can.
Well, we are going to take that high point and take our short break.
We need to take a short break now. When we return, we'll continue with our guest, Dr. Yasha Steinmetz, about her book, Eat Local, Simple Steps to Enjoy Real, Healthy, and Affordable Food.
You're listening to Your Health. Stay with us. Your Health is supported by UNC Health Sciences Library and NC Health Info, working together to connect people everywhere with knowledge to improve health. Visit nchealthinfo.org for answers you can trust.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page on WCHL. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back. You're listening to Your Health. We've been talking with Dr. Yasha Steinmetz, author of her book, Eat Local, Simple Steps to Enjoy Real, Healthy, and Affordable Food. And before the break, we were talking about a bunch of different reasons why it's a good idea to eat local food. And one of the things, Dr. Steinmetz, that you referenced was children, the impact on children knowing food. And a couple of your comments really hit home for me just as a working mom. And our first daughter will eat anything. She's so obedient. And our son will eat fruit and nuts. That's about all he'll eat. And, of course, Pop-Tarts or any sort of junk food he can get his hands on. And it's really, really difficult with a picky child. I know it's important, and yet it's a tough thing to do in our current environment to really promote the healthy foods and to not have the other ones around the house. So I'm interested in your perspective about why this is so important for parents.
Well, there's two things. One is the health of the child. I think that being able to offer that variety of food with all the different textures and tastes is important so that children realize that there is really an abundance of food that's available to them. And so children actually really enjoy a farmer's market, and I think that's a really good introduction because think about the food is at eye level for a lot of their size, so that they see all of the abundance. And I think introducing children just to texture or what does this taste like. I was recently at a cheese festival, and we did a tasting of cheese. So from mild to increasingly sharp. But the cheesemaker was saying, pay attention to texture. Does this taste a little bit like grapefruit? Is there a nut note in here? And so I think just experimenting with that a little bit with kids and like, oh, we're going to have a tasting tonight. Or, you know, what did you like about that? And so they only have to eat one bite, but then they're paying attention to
taste. I'm taking them there, engaging them in that process. Right. Sounds like a smart thing.
Right. So if you give them a little, you know, if you give them a dollar, they can buy whatever they want to. But, you know, they don't have to like it the first time. And so I think I try to repeat several times in the book because it's so important for adults and children. It takes a number of times, you know, up to a dozen or more times of exposure to a child before both adults or children will say whether they actually don't like something. So,
how about the issue of pesticides?
Oh, that's so important. So we're to the point, I think, with research where we're starting to consider that children may be getting maybe more susceptible to some of these effects, and that we're not really testing pesticides on an additive level. They're tested independently, individually, and we know from studies that if children are on an organic diet for a short time, that their body will start to clear the pesticides out. And then, you know, if you put them back on a conventional diet, those pesticide levels go back up. We know that there's pesticides, there's chemicals in women's breast milk that has been found in the uterine cord, so we know it's in vitro. So we're actually exposing children to chemicals at a much, much earlier age in a whole combination of things.
So this may be, A, more nutritious, which you've talked about, B, safer because of the pesticides, and also helping developmentally.
Right. And there are some questions in the book that I recommend, you know, some things that you can ask the farmer, some simple things.
Another thing I thought was interesting is you had a list of questions that you can ask your produce people in the grocery store, too.
Yes, yes. So people can go into the grocery store, and you can start with produce. Now, the laws have changed so that all of your produce has to be identified by state, sometimes by region, and minimally by country. So you can see what's local. You know, it might be within 100 or 200, but you can start choosing foods that's closest to you. And then if you know that something's in the farmer's market that's not in the grocery store, you can approach your grocer and ask about that. You can do the same with meat, fish, dairy, you know, whatever you know is being grown within your area, any food. You can go into the grocery store and start asking, you know, we have peanuts here. Do we have peanut butter, you know, that's locally grown, that's in a grocery store?
Well, it's also exciting to hear from the people who do these farm shares and who participate in really the movement for buying local food, how much they support one another. They see each other at the farmer's market and say, oh, those are really good if you cook them this way. And it becomes more of a topic of conversation in the community, which is a beautiful thing.
Yes, I think this is definitely a grassroots. And I know that it seems like it's trendy and hip and so on. But if you talk to grandparents, they've been doing this.
Mm-hmm.
This is the way that they grew up. Well, and so we're kind of getting back to our roots.
Exactly. No pun intended.
Right.
So you talk in the book about ways to join the local food movement, to join a local food group, or ways to do school gardens and school programs. What do you think for a person who is interested in this idea but hasn't really done anything with the local food movement, what do you think is the most important starting place?
I would say start tasting your local food.
Mm-hmm.
Because the taste of food, and in an adventurous way, you'll find something that will give you this incredible memory that you won't want to let go. And then talk to your farmer. Find a farmer and have a conversation with the farmer. So at a farmer's market, and there's a lot of winter markets in our area, too, so it's not limited to just the summer. But you'll start to understand what's happening in your local food system and then what their concerns are or where they need, where that help is between consumer and farmer. And then everybody else, the restaurateurs, the schools, the hospitals, the grocery stores, that will all fit in once you have those conversations. It's like food with a face, like what are their struggles? And then what are your struggles as a consumer? And then you'll find a lot of bridges between that.
Farmers seem to be a disappearing breed in this country, although we're blessed to have some here locally.
Yes, it's less than 1% of the population. The average age now, I think, is 57. And the concern that I have about that is not only are they vital to our food security because they're growing the majority of our food, but they have vast food knowledge. They know the local varieties. They know what's best. They know the land the best. And when they disappear, they're taking not just their accumulated knowledge would be disappearing with them. It's a bit like some of the cooking skills that you mentioned earlier. There's some really simple cooking skills that all families know, you know, how to cut, how to saute, just very simple things. That could be disappearing, too. And then I wonder what we're leaving our kids because that biodiversity and that knowledge of area and the taste, they'll disappear with them as well. And so our farmers are really concerned about being able to make a livelihood. You know, they're not even on our census as an occupation anymore, and that's indicative of how they're disappearing.
Well, you have stimulated me to take my kids to the farmer's market this weekend. And this book is really just lovely and simple. And yet profound. So tell our listeners, how can they get their hands on this book?
Mm-hmm. It's available through Amazon, and it's available through Barnes & Noble. And both of those links will be on the website, the www.eatlocalsimplesteps, all one word, no space, .com.
Fantastic. And we will put that link as well on our blog for our listeners. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us and to educate all of us.
Great. Christy and Bob, this has been such a pleasure.
We have been talking with Dr. Yasha Steinmetz about her book, Eat Local, Simple Steps to Enjoy Real, Healthy, and Affordable Food. Really, really a fantastic conversation. We are going to take a break, but coming up on House Calls, we'll be answering questions about your health. You're listening to Your Health. Stay with us.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page on News Talk 1360 WCHL, sponsored by UNC Family Medicine. And now, more of Your Health.
Welcome back to Your Health. For the House Call segment of our show today, we're going to spend a few minutes talking about your health questions and concerns.
If you have a question you'd like for us to address on an upcoming show, please send your comments to yourhealth@unc.edu. We'd like to answer a few questions for our listeners.
And, Bob, we've got some good ones today. We're going to talk about low ferritin levels and supplements and breathing and asthma and something else about organic, which we should have talked about earlier on the show today, but we'll answer the question as best as we can. Let's take our very first house call question.
Recently, my doctor diagnosed me with a low ferritin level, and of my life, basically, I've had problems with being anemic, and just wanted to know if there's a way to get more iron in my diet on a vegetarian diet. I've been a vegetarian for about 30 years.
That's a really it's a tough one and a simple one all at the same time. It's great that you have some clarity that you need to work on getting good iron in your diet as a vegetarian. But I would love to have a better sense of what's going on with your levels and how much of that has changed in changes in your diet. But based on what we know, we can give you a few thoughts.
Sure. You know, as a human being, you can absorb iron into your body from one of two ways. You can either get it as heme, which is the molecule in blood that carries oxygen, so the animal kingdom has that, or you can get it as ions from the vegetable kingdom. And since this person is a vegetarian and doesn't eat the former, she's kind of left to do the vegetable sources.
And so good sources of iron in vegetables, we can go back and forth, Bob, but there you can get it through beans and broccoli.
And tofu and raisins and leafy green vegetables, like spinach and kale. The other thing to say about that is you have to watch what you're eating with it. For instance, not many people know this, but if you drink a lot of tea at the same time you're eating this wonderful stuff, it can bind the iron and not let you absorb it in your gut.
And if you eat vitamin C-rich foods at the same time, like oranges or strawberries, those types of foods, even orange juice, it can help you absorb the iron. So a lot of times people who are on iron supplements, we tell you to take it with a little bit of orange juice because it helps your body absorb it. So hopefully that one's helpful to you. And let's go to our next house call question.
Hi, I'm a 55-year-old woman, and I've tried to pay attention to prevention. And a number of years ago, I read that it was very important to take vitamins C and E. And I've never been vitamin deficient. But recently, I've been reading that there's some question about the safety of supplements. Could you comment?
So this caller is really face to face with this whole thing about, well, there must be good vitamins, and if we only took these pills, we'd be much healthier, right? And the truth is, there are certain vitamins that you can get toxic, sort of poisoning symptoms from. And among them are E, C, D, A, and a variety of B complex vitamins.
So you really do. I think you are wise to have some questions about the safety of supplements because in your case, vitamin C and E that you're interested in, there's no good evidence that in a 55-year-old woman that taking those supplements is going to make a difference for your life. No evidence-based recommendations that you should do that routinely. And, you know, it is important to think about, can you get too much of it? You should talk to your doctor about it and look at the labels.
And, you know, if you eat a balanced diet, you should get a lot of natural vitamins, which is probably better for you than trying to take them in pill form. And a lot of those just wind up getting excreted by the kidney. So we have the most vitamin-laden urine in the world in this country.
So we're taking so many supplements. And there has been growing literature about this. We should do a show on just supplements alone. And we'll ask our fantastic health science librarians to give us some information on our blog about some tips for safety of taking supplements. And let's take our next house call question.
I have difficulty breathing sometimes when I run, and one of my friends told me that I might have asthma. What is asthma and how could I have it?
Well, this sounds like your friend might be right, that you may have what's called exercise-induced asthma, being that maybe you don't have asthma all the time or it's not something that you're having to worry about often, but when you run, that sort of brings it on. So maybe, Bob, you can specify what is asthma.
So asthma means a condition where the tubes that carry the air to your lungs are narrowed, either because there's spasm of muscle to cause it or swelling of the lining of those small tubes, and it makes it difficult to get air in and out.
That's a good description. Some people will get what's called a pulmonary function test, where you can go and get fancy, breathe into this machine that'll give the doctor more information about whether or not you have asthma. But in your case, if it's happening only when you exercise, you know, one pretty reasonable thing is to ask your doctor to give you an inhaler to help sort of see if that makes a difference before you run in this thing that's happening to you, and you can report back.
And, you know, as a person who's experienced this myself a lot of times, it's nice to be able to just take a couple of puffs on an inhaler, wait 20 minutes, and then go exercise, and it really helps.
And the inhaler that we're talking about in particular is called albuterol, that is a rescue inhaler. And if you're only having to use it right before exercise, then that's a safe thing to do, and certainly a safe thing to try in the context of your doctor. Let's take our last house call question.
I've seen lots of food in the grocery stores lately with the label organic on them. What exactly does that mean, and is it better for you?
Ooh, we should have talked about this earlier. Organic. You go to the store and you see some things are labeled organic and some things are not. And there might be a change in price. There might not. But what exactly is the difference is a really good one.
It's interesting. As an old chemistry professor, I want to think, well, you know, things we eat are always organic, but that's not what this means. I mean, the opposite of that is inorganic, so we're not eating stones. The notion here is how this food is raised. And organic, to me, means no pesticides, no artificial chemicals poured on it, no dyes put on the strawberries to make them look red or whatever, but it's the real natural product raised in the ground.
And, you know, a lot of people I know, Adam, I don't always buy the organic foods. I'll just self-disclose, and Adam does. Do you, Bob?
No.
But, you know, there is a growing amount of concerns of the various additives and pesticides that get put on our foods. And so I think it's a very reasonable thing to do. And it just sort of is something that we're growing and learning. We just had all this conversation about the benefits of buying local. If you're buying local, then you don't have to worry about those things. You're talking to the farmer and you can have that conversation about how they raise the food in a healthy way, in a way that promotes health to the maximum.
I think it's always wise to just wash off produce and fruits and vegetables before you eat them to be sure that any pesticides that made their way onto there, you could get rid of.
Mm-hmm. And the question is, you know, a lot of people say it's really hard to wash it all off. But whether you buy it local, whether you buy the organic, or whether you buy the not organic, I would definitely agree with you, Bob, to wash your food, the vegetables, before you eat it. Thank you for your house call questions. We'll put up another link about organic foods in the context of our book today, Eat Local, and hope that all together will answer your questions about making healthy choices with your fresh vegetables. We want to thank you today for joining us for your health. We hope that we've addressed some issues and concerns that are important to you, important to your health, and we want you to share your questions. You can email us at yourhealth@unc.edu. You can visit us online. You can go to Twitter, or you can go to our blog at yourhealthradio.org.
We'd like to thank the staff of WCHL and the UNC Department of Family Medicine, UNC Healthcare, for their sponsorship, and our guest, Dr. Yasha Steinmetz. We hope you'll join us the next time on Your Health.
And thank you, Dr. Bob Gwaither, for being with us today. We'll see you guys next time.
The purpose of Your Health Radio is to educate listeners on healthcare issues. Listeners should always discuss their own health or medical concerns with their personal physician or other healthcare provider. Your Health is not a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page has been brought to you by UNC Family Medicine for the Chapel Hill Carborough community. You can hear Your Health on Saturdays at 9 a.m., Sundays at 9 and 5, and Mondays at 6 and 10 p.m. Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, a presentation of UNC Family Medicine and News Talk 1360, WCHL.